Welcome to Hallel Fellowship on the internet at hallel.info. Today's study explores the Torah readings Matto and Maase, covering Numbers chapter 30 verse 2 through the end of the book in chapter 36. This study recaps the journey of born-again Israel, how this peculiar people in the world went from deliverance from slavery in Egypt to relationship with the Lord at Sinai to a welcome home rest in the Promised Land. We zero in on how the disturbing judgment on Midian, together with a warning from James chapter 4 against battling other believers, can help us navigate the confusing messages facing us in the world today.
A few highlights that we just want to remember as we finish out the book of Bamidbar or Numbers, that like we've been talking about through this, that this is a contrast between the second generation, the reborn generation of Israel. That was born again. And the first generation. The first generation was that which was delivered out of the house of bondage. But as we have seen throughout the journeys through there in Exodus, as it talks about the history, and then again as it picked up there in Numbers, that this was a bit of a challenge of trusting the one who took them out to be able to take them into the land. So it was the one who took them out of the house of bondage, who gave them water, gave them daily bread, manna, 6 days a week, twice as much on the sixth day to carry them over through the Shabbat until the manna came back again on the first day of the week. Gave them water out of a rock as you're in the midst of a wilderness where there would be nothing. And then supplied them. They said, "We want meat to eat." Well, they got it. They got more than they wanted for. And in fact, as it's described, that they got so much it was coming out. Yeah, they just were basically gagging on it. There was so much. And yet, while it was still in between their teeth, thus then the plague came. So be careful of what you seek for, because you think that what your Lord is already providing is not good enough, that your daily bread is not good enough. Be careful of what we lust for, because that can be something that does us in the process, and we gag on it. So, again, it's a question of, are we the masters of our own sustenance? And that is what the Nile is known for, that idea of the provision, the contrast of the lands, Mitzrayim, the land of the Nile. The Nile goes right, the Nile River flows up right through it to the Mediterranean Sea, and it floods regularly, bringing nutrients down. So it's something that the people could count on. And then, you know, Yosef started a campaign of building the canals and such, and those, you could even see remnants of those today, of those canals that Yosef had commissioned to be dug. And those took that water, the Nile, out into the surrounding areas. So that area of Goshen and the area of where you had the Nile Delta as it dumps into the Mediterranean Sea, the Great Sea, that became a fertile place. And it's like, we dug it and it happened. We dug the canals and the agriculture happens. So the blessing is for whom? Us. Yeah. So Mitzrayim can be a lesson about we are the masters of our society. And you see, I mean, you can see remnants of it today with the great pyramids and the temples and such. Wow, it was great mastery and skill and wisdom that they were given over making things. Well, wonderful, incredible things that they made. Contrast that with the land of Canaan. It is a land that talks about the Lord blessing. The Lord brings the rain. So that thus is a blessing that the Lord brings. And if that rain doesn't come on a regular basis, what happens to the land? Dries up. And you see, like in modern Israel, what they have to do to bring the water in when it is not just naturally provided. They have to do lots of canals, desalination, lots of pipelines pumping the water all over Hill and Dale. They developed the drip systems that you can see in that vineyard right across the street. those came from Israel originally because they developed it as a way to be able to water plants without using a whole lot of water in the process. So thus, you were able to bring mastery over the land. So one of the things that when you come into the land, if you have mastery over it, don't forget where the blessings truly come from on the land. And we see also with the lesson of Korach in Numbers 16 and 17 about, are we blessed with the roles that we are given, or do we want another role that is not ours? And do we want to say, no, you in that particular role should not have it, and we will take it because we will do a better job with it? So whatever role that we're in, and the Apostle Paul talks about that with his illustration of the hands and feet and eyes and ears, that we're all parts of a body and we all serve different functions. And we should not look down or look with scorn or look covetously with what the other functions of the body are all about, because we are each assigned with a particular role that we serve within the body. And that is something that goes back to the garden, that kind of a deception of God has given you a role, God has given you a task. Do you want something more? Do you want knowledge of good and bad? Do you want to take that for yourself? Or do you want to say, oh, that comes from another source? I have to go to the source of knowledge of good and bad. I don't become the fount of knowledge myself. I don't discover it within myself or discover it from some other source. And then we have the lesson of Balaam, which we see the tragic ending of that with Numbers 22 through 25 and then through 31. We see the epilogue of that particular episode of what happened with that deception there at Peor. Yeah, Christine, you got a comment or something? Oh, sorry. No worries. But one of the things that we should always be checking for is where this source of wisdom we're looking for is actually coming from. Because we may be fighting against God in the process. So these are particular lessons. And now it's very interesting that what is a catchphrase that we saw with Balaam, what he had talked about in his oracles? This is the saying, this is the parable of the one whose what is opened, or whose eyes are opened. And we saw the parallel passage that we looked at here in Acts, that this passage that we looked at in Acts chapter 9 was about the Shaul thought he saw clearly, thought his eyes were open, but the Lord had to reveal to him that really you're blind and you need to have your eyes opened and revealed what it is that you are actually looking at, you know. And thus he saw more clearly that what he thought was the enemy, Yeshua, as the Mashiach, as the Messiah, was truly the hope of Israel in the process. So thus his eyes had to be opened. So Balaam was given a vision. In fact, we even have several messianic prophecies that we looked at when we were going through that particular passage of Numbers. He was able to see that, but then he couldn't see. It's interesting because when we saw in that particular passage in those visions, he was talking about, I only see a portion of the camp of Israel, not to the end part of them. I'm only looking at a portion of them. Well, what did he end up inspiring then in Midian? Inspiring the people there of Midian to try to entice, dilute, draw away by using the same tactics that you see of the religions of Canaan, use very similar other tactics. You know, because when you read about later in the Judges and in the historical writings when they talk about the temple women, using temple prostitutes, those men and women of them. That was common both in the era of Canaan and then later on into the Greco and Roman eras of that was very common, because that, as it was then, as it is now, you see that sort of idea of that which God has given to be twisted and seen to be an entry point into knowledge of good and bad. That part, that involving that as your connection to divine, to otherworldly powers, is seen as your connection into it. And as you read some of the founding documents that are going into what they call on, what they call it, critical gender theory, on some of the founding documents of that going back into the 1990s, and some of them you'll even see in the 1980s. Those ideas that you see, the foundation parts of it, even in talking about here with the Baal of Peor and Balaam of Peor, with what was going on there, the entry point of enticing with the sensual aspects of it, it was an ancient way of trying to divine good and bad, to tap into the powers that be, as it was today. So when they talked about later on these ideas of coming in with varying degrees of your, how do you say it, your approach to gender, to then approach children and read to them, they use in the particular founding document of critical gender theory, the goal of it is to read the children into filth, meaning to desensitize them to filth so that they do not become concerned, shocked about it. They don't have their guard up. You break the guard down, as it was before, as it is now. So the things we're seeing today, not new by any means, but it's one of those things that you recognize your enemy no matter what uniform that they're particularly wearing. It is something that you'll see in Eastern cultures. You'll see it in Western cultures. You'll see it, yeah, same as it ever was, indeed. So when you recognize the powers of the adversary in whatever clothes or whatever form that they come into, whether they're wearing a white coat of academia, whatever sort of garb that they are particularly wearing, those things you will see come in. So that's what we have here in this particular episode with Balaam, is a warning. Ancient, it was a warning for that particular generation, the second generation. So remember, this is the reborn generation. So when you're thinking about the reborn generation, it's not like, oh yeah, okay, the first generation died off and that's all that they had to deal with, was it? No, it wasn't all that you had to deal with. That reborn generation that would cross over the Yarden into the land of rest, they still had the struggle there. And sadly, this was a very stark reminder of what it was that they were going to be facing. It's a stark reminder of what we are when we are facing. Some people get the idea that, you know, you have this covering from the Lord. The Lord comes in, grabs you. That's what we commemorate with baptism. That's what parents are pledging for with circumcision, to get their sons going on the right direction for it. But is that the end of the story? No. It's how we end, not how we begin. Parents can do a great job launching us off. And then at that point, they trust in the Lord. Trust in the Lord that when they release those arrows from the bow, that they will land on the target. They will hit the mark on the other side. Now, that's all in the Lord's doing on the arrow as it is in flight. But the launching of the arrows, the protecting them, preparing them for flight, all of that is something that the parents and the families and the greater society, that's all a part of. So when you have any sort of movements in society that are trying to make arrows that don't fly straight, so to speak, that is a terrible, terrible thing that people should stand up for. And when we talk about people, the people that get the fair warning ahead of time. So one of the things that we're taking a look at here today in particular is looking at Numbers 31. We've talked about that a bit already, about the fall of Midian, the fall of Balaam. Now, what do we know about Midian just from the Bible standpoint? Now, if we just look at it geographically, Midian, you know, Midian, if you look at the geography of it, you know, Midian is Saudi Arabia. You know, if you know the Gulf of Aqaba, that's just directly, it's a land of water that's between the Sinai Peninsula and Saudi Arabia at the bottom part of it. But there's this point of land at the Sinai Peninsula comes down to a point. If you go straight down from modern day Israel, there's a body of water. Modern day Eilat is right there. It was a port city right there. And that is at this Gulf of Aqaba there. And on the eastern shore of the Gulf of Aqaba, modern day Saudi Arabia, is Midian. So this area there, what do we know about Midian from the Bible? Who lived there? Yitro, Jethro. That was Moshe's father-in-law. So there is a deep connection. And when you see the interactions between Yitro and Moshe, you see that there is this great respect for this priest of Midian in interacting with Moshe. Oh, we have a comment or a question over here. Hi, thank you.
Hello. Hi. I was just thinking of, not only is it Yitro, but his wife, Sephora.
Yes,
you know, Sephora. And the circumstance, or the circumcision made with no man's hand.
Yes.
And so very tender and such an important part of Moshe's life and the ministry. And yeah, thank goodness for Sephora and Yitro. Thank you.
So, great example. So, is the problem just, you know, like, so to speak, can anything good come out of Midian? What's the answer to it? Yes, Zipporah came out of Midian. So, thus, something good can come out of Midian. So, the issue is not just, all Midian people just, you know, drop the proverbial nuke on them and take them all out, and thus, problem solved. What is the actual issue there? Is what you would call that is a cultural thing. You had the Baal of Peor, or the Lord of Peor, that was set up there, a particular deity god. And then you had Balaam, who was a prophet, and we know historically and archaeologically, we talked about this in times past related to those passages in Numbers, but we've actually found his, I don't know what you would call it, his shrine related to him. Historically, we have found him, Balaam of Peor. Balaam, son of Peor. We have found that, and found that he was in contact with all kinds of different so-called deities of the particular time period. So when we see that the Lord reached through him, that this was delivered in spite of him, that this was became a something that Yeshua warned about in the Gospels, is that your people who you teach may enter the kingdom, but you yourself won't enter in. The Lord may work in spite of you to service the kingdom. So you may do all sorts of great things, but in the end, the Lord says, I don't know you. Yeah, you've done wonderful. You've been a servant, but. I mean, we see examples of it with Nebuchadnezzar. We see it with Cyrus and Darius, servants of the Lord, even called an anointed one, Mashiach. But in the end, again, the ending is what is important, how you end more than how you begin. So when we get back to what we're taking a look at here, Numbers 31, one of the things we see is, are we looking to be a friend of the flesh or a friend of God? Now, as we see in the beginning, as we've gone through Genesis, that heaven called Abraham out of his spiritual slavery there in Ur, as all kinds of deities were going on there, to be a conduit of blessing for all the nations. And we got the promise there of Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, that through you, all the world will be blessed. And as we've talked about that, what is it that through Abraham, all the world has become blessed? Mashiach, yes, Yeshua, the Mashiach, is what has come through Abraham to bless all nations that have been blessed into it. So we say, if you have the faith of Abraham, that is reckoned to you as what? Righteousness. And that is the ending that the Lord is looking for. Do you have that kind of trust? That you are ending your life and your time with that trust in the Lord, and the Lord's leading, and the Lord's covering, and the Lord's removal of our sins, transgressions, and iniquities. That is what the Lord is doing. So we see also that heaven delivered Israel out of the house of bondage. That's there right in the first commandment. I am the Lord your God, who what? Took you out of the house of bondage. So that's a whole part of the first statement there in the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20. That is what the Lord did. Delivered out of the house of bondage. And that house of bondage was physical, because they were physically being kept there by the superpower of the time period, but also spiritually in bondage. Because, you know, they, as we've seen through the book of Numbers, that, you know, they left their heart in Mitzrayim. They could have had the t-shirt to that, because they kept dreaming and saying, why did you take us out? Why, we were wonderful there. So was it back what we heard about before, where the Lord was talking with Moshe and said, I've heard their crying out and their groanings for deliverance? Or is it what the people said after they'd been delivered in the desert? Oh, why did you take us out? We had it so great there. We had food and everything was so wonderful. You should have just left us there. So heaven delivered Israel out of Mitzrayim, out of the house of bondage, but then called Israel there when they got to the mountain. So delivered out, Exodus through the sea, taken to the mountain, then the call comes in Exodus chapter 19. Called her to be the kingdom of priests and the holy nation. So with that call that goes out, and you see it in Exodus 19 verses 3 through 6, Moshe went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell to the sons of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So, was this if statement there put to them before deliverance or after? After. So, just like you say before, you know, was Abraham circumcised before he was declared righteous or after? After. So thus, what you're seeing here is that this if statement could also be said, if you continue this road, if you continue in this leading to the land, you will be then the kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And you see that it took the reboot of Israel with that second generation going into the land. That reboot to then say, okay, now this is a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. But as we continue reading on, we can read on in Judges and Joshua and 1 Kings and 2 Kings and 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel. It's, what do we then see? Is this perfect? No, not by a long shot. Not by a long shot. Yeah, it's like this. One of my relatives is currently going through and studying all of the kings of both Yehuda and Israel, so both of the southern and northern parts of Israel. And it's like, if you were to label them, okay, bad kings, good kings, how many would there be in the good list? Very few. It's just unbelievable. And if you were to say the bad list out of all of them, both kingdoms, bad. So, yes, Lorela, you have a comment or a question there?
And there's a third list. They started out good and ended up bad.
And that's where you go. So that's one of those things with the bad list. It's how you end. How you end. Because there was some that started out great. And it's like, wow, this is extremely promising. And then how did they end up? Oh, yeah. So that's one of the great lessons that we have is that, you know, if we get worried along the way, if there is stumbles or this or that, what lessons do we have? We get it from Proverbs. Though the righteous, though he falls, he will get up seven times. So that is a great picture. And then we see something that we have in our interpersonal relationships, which gets into James chapter 4 a bit more. So we get back to our question here about friend of the flesh or friend of God. So one of the things that we can see is that this calling to be separate from the flesh, but engaged with the world's connection with heaven, persists through to the day of the Lord, because this picture of being a kingdom of priests, you see it show up there in 2 Peter chapter 2, or 1 Peter chapter 2, and also in Revelations chapter 1 and 5 and 20. This kingdom of priests, that idea continues on. It's not something that you had the plan A that God said, okay, we'll do the kingdom of priests thing. Well, that didn't work. Okay, we'll reboot it and come up with a new game plan now. That has always been the game plan, is that there would be this kingdom of priests. But as it has always been, so it will always be. How do you want to remain in the kingdom of priests? Do you want to remain in the role that the Lord has put out for us, to be into this particular role, to be called out, or as the modern parlance is, weird? Do we want to be weird in the world? Well, yeah, that is exactly what we talk about, kadosh, to be separate, to be separated off. The Lord has made us weird from the world. We are made to be different, a peculiar, as you'll even see some translations put it. So the world would look at it and go, huh. Well, the question is, when the world looks at it and go, huh, what is it that they, in particular, are seeing? So as we continue on here further, we see that this face-to-face connection that both Abraham and Moshe have is something that's very distinctive of this friend. Are we a friend of God or a friend of the flesh? And we see examples of this, as in Exodus 33, verse 11, where it's talked about that Moshe would meet as the cloud in the early days, as before the tabernacle was fully set up and put into operation with the priesthood, that the presence of God in the cloud would come down right before his tent, called the tent of meeting, was his tent before it became the tent and the place. So that's where you would have the presence of the Lord would show up. And it said that the Lord would talk with Moshe as one talks with a friend face to face. So something that this commentator observed is that the repeated expressions of "I know you by name, I am pleased with you, and you have found favor with me" is what you see in Exodus chapter 33 as it continues on, and chapter 34 when he says, "Show me your glory." So these examples of the Lord showing his glory and having this personal connection is that the Lord knows us by name. What is it we see in the book of Revelation? That each one of us is given what? A new name that only what? Yes. That's very unique. It's not just something that is a generic name. No, it is a unique name. And what do we know about what the biblical meaning of name is? Your deeds, your reputation, what you are known for. So what you are known for. So that's, thus, when you talk about how you end in life, that is what? It's the whole book of your life is your name and what you are known for. So thus, when we continue on and we see in the Apostle Yaakov, as we saw in James chapter 4 of his letter, he points to the source of these quarrels between believers, to a war that is within our members, just like what the Apostle Paul talks about, that the congregation of God, the assembly, is made up of what? Parts. Each one of us are parts of a whole. So, thus, quarrels between parts of the body are wars within one's own body, you know, like punching yourself in the face. Yeah, ouch is right. Yeah, breaking your own nose by punching yourself in the face. But the question is, you know, do we take our directions, our commandments that come down and through to traditions, do we take that from the world, or do we take those things from heaven? Where do we take our marching orders from? As we and people of God, as we approach each other, where do we take our marching orders from? Some sort of philosophy about how people should interact together? Yeah, or the instructions of God and how we should treat each other. And like the golden rule is a good lesson of how people within the body of God should be treating each other. So thus, it's very interesting that when the Apostle Yaakov there in James 4, verse 4 says, "You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." That's why this reading is a companion to the whole situation with Midian. Because what was Midian about? It was about enticing you to go after a different god. That's the priestesses of the Baal of Peor were leading astray. To entice you away by what? Your desires, your passions, to lead you away. To then say, no, I know what I want to do, but I will do something else because I have been given a picture, a vision, le'olam, vayed, over the horizon and going on into the future. I've been given a vision of this, to where this impulse will lead. So thus, we have advanced warning. We know where this story is going to lead. And in our own lives, if we are continually examining ourselves to see where we're at, we will know where that those impulses will lead if we just go along with them. And if we've got this thing in our head and we just want to explode at somebody else, we know where that goes because we've been there before. We also have the divine insight over the horizon. We know where those sorts of things go, what they do inside the believers. We had seen that earlier with the example of Korach. That's a huge example of what can happen with inside the body of believers. When you've got somebody who just says, "Map, no, I'm going to just usurp the way things run here because I think I know better." So that's a huge lesson for all of us about this. And as we go into the world today, when we just look at the lessons of the world, I mean, right now, the Olympics are going on. Everybody has seen what has gone on here with, as we were seeing, that's what do we know from how things were created? Genesis 1, 26, 27. In the beginning, to what? God made them male and female. In the image of God, he created them. So even those that maybe don't know God know that it's just, you can maybe make some ideas and visions of saying if someone wants to, you know, they think that they're a woman, though they're a man, that can, you can say, okay, well, let you be you. But the question is we as believers, what are we going to do? When you have someone, a quote, drag queen, unquote, shows up at your school, when you have various things that are just reprehensible show up at your school library, what do you do? When you have various things pumped into your children's entertainment, what do you do? What do you do? Do we just say, well, you do you? Or is it that we do like what one of our forefathers in faith did when they were throwing Christians into the Colosseum in Rome and said, you know, in the name of Yeshua, stop. Well, he got a beat down and was killed, but soon thereafter, it stopped. He died in the process of it. But in the end of it, you just say, hey, this has got to stop. Now we know, we see in the book of Revelation, that there will be ones that are coming like in the spirits of Eliyahu, the witnesses, and they'll get a proverbial beatdown to death. That's what's testified for that. But their testimony will be one of the nations have got to decide at that point, which direction are you going to go?
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info, hallel.info.